We're doing Parshat Lech Lecha. We're holding at Revi'i. We're beginning this year with Revi'i. Vayehi, and it was Bimei Amraphel Melech Shinar, in the days of Amraphel, the king of Shinar. What is Shinar? Shinar is Babel, right? That's what our sages teach us. That Nin Aru, Shinar is Shenin Aru, Meitei Babel, Meitei Mabul, that the dead of the flood all went down to Babylon. Babylon is very low, and that's why all the waters receded down to Babylon. Babylon, really, you'd have a very hard time to make yourself an outhouse, the Gemara says, because in Babylon, every time you dug a hole, water would come up. There was a tremendous amount of water under their property. So our sages say that Shinar is Babylon. So Amraphel is this king of Babylon. Now, what is the capital of Babylon? The capital of Babylon, of the Babylonian Empire, is Nineveh. And we've seen that the king of Nineveh is Nimrod. So have we had a change of kings here? We'll have to discuss that. Our sages tell us that really his name was Nimrod. Why was he called Amraphel? Amraphel is a nickname he got. Amar vehipil Avram Avinu betoch kevshanesh. Because he said, I will throw him into that burning furnace. And then he did. He took this little child, Avram, and he viewed him as a major threat to his cult, really. And Avram's questioning, how could he be a god? And so he threatens and threatens until he finally, he does, throw Avram into the furnace. And the other opinion says his real name was Amraphel. And the nickname he got was Nimrod, because Nimrod stems from the word Mered, rebellion. And Nimrod got the whole world riled in rebellion against God, leading them to build the Tower of Babel, the Tower of Babel. So the first king, it is the days of Amraphel, either that's his name or Nimrod's his name, the king of Shinar, the king of Babel. Arioch, Melech Elasar, Arioch, the king of a place called Elasar, Kedor Laomer, Melech Elam, Vetidal Melech Goyim, king of nations. Asumil Chama, so in these days they made a war in Bera Melech Sodom, with Bera, the king of Sodom, Ve'et Birsha Melech Amora, and a man by the name of Birsha. You notice these are wicked names. Ra, Resha, the king of Amora. Shinov Melech Adma, Vishem Ever Melech Tzivoyim, Umelech Bela Hitzoar, and the king of Bela, we don't know his name, but the city of Bela is also known Tzoar. Kol Eilech Ovru Eleme Kasidim Uyam HaMelech, they all gathered to the valley of where they'd be able to get seed, and that is where we have Yam HaMelech. And there's all kinds of midrashim here, how ultimately that the Yam HaMelech got there. 12 shana avdut Kedor LaOmer. For 12 years, these five kings were subservient to Kedor LaOmer. U'shloshesrei shana maradu. And for 13 years, they rebelled. So we have a 13-year rebellion. These five kings were puppet states for 12 years. And then they had enough. They rebelled against Kedor LaOmer. And after 13 years that they're not paying taxes, ו-14 שנה בא כדור לעומר והמלכים אשר איתו. כדור לעומר comes along with his kings, והיקוט רפאים מהשתרות קרניים את הזוזים בהם ואת הימים בשווי קרייתיים. They defeat the רפאים, those are the great warriors in a place called Ashtarot Karnaim, and the Zuzim, which were some powerful warriors, they beat them and the warriors that everyone was scared of. They wiped them all out. So they amassed a great army, and these four kings united and destroyed the five kings. Ve'et HaChori, and the Chori nation, they also wiped them out. Be'hariram Seir, in their mountain of Seir. Chori was an unusual nation. They were a nation that could sniff the ground and tell you what to plant, what the ground is fitting. They understood nature very well. That's why they were called Chori. They were merichim. They could smell very well. Ad el Paran Asher al Amidbar. Vayashuvu, vayavo elen mishpati kadesh. So now they returned to the flatlands of justice, and that is a place called Kadesh. Vayakut kosedei Amaleki, and they also wiped out the fields of Amalek. Now, obviously, these aren't the fields of Amalek. Amalek was Avraham Avinu's great-great-great-great-grandson. The place that is now, in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, known as the fields of Amalek, that place, they wiped out its inhabitants. That's what the pasuk means. Ve'gam et ha'amori ha'yishev b'chatzatzon tamar. And even the Amori that were sitting in Ein Gedi, they wiped them out as well. Chatzatzon tamar is a reference to Ein Gedi. So now, the pasuk goes back and tells us a description of what happened at the war. These five kings went out, and they set up battle in this valley of the Sid. Et Kedola Omer, and the pasuk goes through the names of the four kings, four against five, and the pasuk tells us, we know the famous story, that the four kings won and they captured Lot. Chazal tell us they captured Lot. Their idea was, we will capture Lot, and after Lot we go on for Avram. The first step was to destroy these five kings, and then when Avram has no neighboring countries around him, then they felt confident they could attack Avram. Now Avram is a powerful warrior, as we're about to see. Vayava palit, this one man who escaped the giant Og, comes vayaged l'Avram ha'ivri. And here we see that Avram is called Avram ha'ivri. Right, that famous name, here you have it. What does it mean, Avram ha'ivri? One understanding is Avram the Hebrew. Another understanding is that Avram came from the other side of the Euphrates. So they knew him. He's like, they call us the Americans. When these people come to America, we call them the Israelis. So Avram was known as Avram the Hebrew. But another understanding is that the whole world was going one way. They were all following pagan ways. And Avram stood up and said, no, that's wrong. So it's considered as though he stood on one side of the fence and the rest of the world was on the other side of the fence. So that's another understanding of what Avram ha'ivri means. A fifth understanding is that Avram maintained the language of his great-great-grandfather Aver. We know that when the languages were confused, so Avram maintained the language of Aver. And we discussed years ago that this is really a machlokas rishonim. This understanding is quoted by the Kuzari, the Rav Yehuda Alevi. But really the Ramban says that it would seem that if Avram came from Babylon, he was talking Aramaic. That was the mother tongue over there. So Avram probably spoke that Semitic tongue of Aramaic. And that's the language he was talking. So that some commentaries don't go with that understanding, that that's how Avram was called, Ha'ivri. Now, this man that runs from the war camp, he runs from the battle, and he comes to Avram Ha'ivri, and Avram is camping by Mamre the Emori. And Mamre is Achi Eshkol v'Achi Aner, the brother of Eshkol and Aner, v'hem balei brit Avram. And they are the people who Avram made a covenant with. So it seems like they must have been pretty important people if Avram makes a pact with them. So Avram hears that his nephew has been captured. It's his nephew Lot, and Avram married his niece Sarai. So it's not only his nephew, but it's also his wife's brother. It's his brother-in-law. Lot is both. Avram hears that his brother has been captured. So he quickly gets his disciples ready. Those that were born in his house. 318. He has 318 knights on hand to go to war at a second's notice. Says the Ramban in Drashat Torat Hashem Tmima, this is a sign of how powerful Avram was. Because the Ramban says, in my day and age, I don't know of a king, go find a king that's so powerful that on 1 second's notice, he just hears he has to go to war, he has in his house 318 knights ready to go to war. That's Avram. Avram doesn't have to call in the reserves. He has standing in active duty at any given moment, 318 men ready to go to war. So these people, these four kings, when they thought we first have to wipe out the surrounding territory before we attack Avram, they knew what they were doing. They knew that Avram was a serious threat. And Avram hears that this is what they're doing. They've captured his nephew. That's an act of war. He's not going to sit around and wait for them to come for him. He goes out and attacks. So he chases them to the territory that is known as Dan. And the territory of Dan is the territory way up north. And the tribe of Dan had idol worship in their midst for much of their history. And so when Avram reaches that locale in Israel, he's weak. How can he move forward from there? Now, here, it's worth looking at the commentaries, because this is the place where we first find the word chinuch. The pasuk calls these people chanichav, the people who he was mechanech. And Rashi over here tells us that the word chinuch means to get a vessel to start being used for its ultimate purpose. The beginning of use of a vessel, the inauguration of a vessel, that's called Chanukah HaMizbeach. When we inaugurate the Mizbeach, Chanukah, Chinuch, means to begin using something for its ultimate purpose, to get something accustomed to its ultimate purpose. If that is the understanding of Chinuch, then our job as Mechanchim is to get the child used to doing what we ultimately want him to do. Our job is to give the Torah values and the Torah way of life as his second nature. People often think, let him understand it. I very often hear people, especially youngsters, teenagers, they say, a guy actually told me this, why do you teach your son to make a bracha? Let him first understand what God is, and after he understands what God is, you'll explain to him that you have to say thank you, and then hopefully he'll understand that you're supposed to say thank you with a blessing before you eat and drink. And that is that going 180 degrees with the ways of the Torah. The Torah tells us, no, you get him accustomed. Chinuch is, like we just saw, get him accustomed to what you want him to ultimately be. The first step of chinuch is habit. Let him form good habits. There's a frightening Gemara here. The Gemara tells us, why was Avram Avinu punished that his offsprings were slaves in Egypt for 210 years? So firstly, we see from this Gemara, from the question, we already understand that the 210 years of slavery in Egypt were a punishment for Avram. So that deserves a class on its own, just that line in the Gemara. But what does the Gemara answer? The Gemara tells us, Mipenei she'asa angalia betalmidei chachamim, because he took the rabbis and he said, let them do my work for me. I have to go to war. I'm not going to go out and hire mercenaries. I have the rabbis who I've been teaching all these years. Now let them come and help me when I need them to go and take out my nephew, release him from captivity. So the sages say that for that sin, for the fact that he told them, come help me out, for that sin, his children were slaves for 210 years. Avram could have said, what do you mean? I gave him life. I taught him monotheism. We might say that he made them work for one night, and God said, okay, you made them work illegitimately, I'll make your children work. So you're saying, how come for the bad, God goes like a million times what he did? So that's, Tosus asked that question. Tosus says, how come if the spies went 40 days, God said a year for a day? Tosus asked that question, and Tosus remains with the question. Tosus and Sota, if I'm not mistaken. So we don't know the ways of God. But one thing we do know, the Gemara is giving us a very powerful message about asking our students or the rabbis who we teach to do work for us. Now, we have to learn this Gemara more in depth. We're just learning the parasha and touching on Gemaras. But when we learn the Gemara, we have to analyze what's the Gemara telling us. What did Avram really do wrong? Let's continue. So he chases them till Dan. And in Dan, he foresees his children's sin, and he cannot continue. So we have to know that we have a responsibility to God to do what's right. But we also have a responsibility to our parents. Sometimes a kid becomes a gangster and the parents are, they can't sleep at night. And you talk to him and you say, what are you doing with your life? And he says, it's my life. Let me do what I want. Doesn't work that way. To an extent, it's your life, but you can't trample over everyone else. When Avraham Avinu's great-great-great-grandchildren sinned in Dan, when they, the tribe of Dan, had idol worship in their midst, centuries earlier already, Avraham feels the impact. Vayechalek aleihem laila. He divided over them at night. That's a simple understanding. But if we open the book of Job, the book of Eov, what does Eov say? Yov ad yom yivaled bo. May the day I was born be lost. If only God would wipe it out from history. Velaila ma'or agaver. And the night in which it was declared that a man impregnated a woman. The night that my father impregnated my mother, let that night be banished from history. That night and that day should never have light. They should never be blessed. They should never have good things said about them. Eov is cursing. He's cursing his day, the Navi says. He's cursing the fact that he was ever born. But our sages have another understanding in that verse. Our sages say that when Eov said, Yov ad yom ivaled bo, ve'laila amar hor agaver, and the night in which it was declared a man impregnated a woman, that's a reference to the Malach Laila. There is an angel in heaven called Laila, the Gemara says, based on that pasuk in Eov. And that angel, when a woman becomes pregnant, that angel declares in heaven, oh, a woman's become pregnant. And then he takes a drop from the fetus and he brings it before God and he says, what will be with this drop? And God says, you guys know the famous Gemara, will he be brave? Will he be fearful? Will he be wealthy? Will he be tall? Will he be short? Right? The Gemara says everything except for will he be a God-fearing person. Because that they don't have in the hands of heaven. That's in our hands. So this pasuk as well, when the pasuk says he divided over them Laila, the night, so Chazal tell us, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, that's a reference to the angel. The angel that came to help Avram Avinu out, who divided up the forces? Avram and the angel Laila. Vayechalek aleihem, he divided over them Laila together with the angel named Laila. Huvavadav, he divided with his servants. They're attacking from two fronts. Vayakem, and they smote them. Vayildefem at Chova, they chased them to the place called Chova. Asher misemol le Damasek, which is left of Damascus. And here you guys will see Rashi. Rashi quotes Chazal on this. So Avram wins over these very powerful four kingdoms. These four kings who defeated giants. They defeated five kings. And Avram takes them on and he wins. And we know the famous Medrash that Avram threw sand at them and the sand turned into spears and swords. You guys know that. Very important Medrash to tell your children. And you guys know the story of Nachum Ish Gamzu and the sand, right? Everyone know the story?
Yeah, we have it a few times.
You've had it a few times. Yeah, you know the story. Yeah? You know the story of Nachum Ish Gamzu and the sand? Good. And you guys know that Nachum Ish Gamzu had no hands and no feet? You guys know that too. Good. So you know everything. Good. Let's continue. Vayashev et kol ha-rechush. So Avram gives back all the wealth. And here there's a discussion among the commentaries, did he do right or wrong in giving back all the wealth? There are those that hold it against him. According to one Medrash, God says to Avram, by what right do you take these people and give them under kings that are pagans and send them back to their pagan ways? You want to give them the wealth? Fine. But why are you taking the people? Legally, you own them. You won the war. By what right do you take these people and their children who you could have educated and say, take them back, they're all yours. So to speak, God says, who asked you to be so left? You're not helping them. Take them and teach them, educate them, teach them what's right. Then you're being liberal, then you're helping them out. Don't think you're being nice to them by saying, I pull my hands back. And that has a very deep message. Sometimes we're embarrassed to do what's right. Even Avram, who was the epitome of right, Avram Avinu, he was teaching the whole world. But now that he won the war, So the next few psukim are, so to speak, Avram's apology for winning. So he gives back the wealth, and he says, I hope I didn't use up too much merits to God. And in essence, God says, wait, what'd you give him back for? So this is a common mistake that we all make. On the one hand, we know that the forefathers were so much greater than us that it's very difficult for us to even begin understanding who they were. So by what right do I talk the way I'm talking? So what I'm saying on the surface literally is wrong. But what I'm saying the way I'm saying, because at the end of the day, we do have to take messages from the Midrashim of Chazal. So to say it about Avraham Avinu, I don't mean it literally. I'm saying it that way, but I don't mean it the way I'm saying it. But to take the message for us, so that we do have to take the message. That Avraham had a responsibility, and when we have a responsibility, so we have to stand up to it. Do we know why Avraham really didn't do it? What was Avraham's calculation? Why did he err over here? I don't know what the calculation was. But I could know that our calculation has to be, we shouldn't be embarrassed. Was Avraham embarrassed? Probably not. There was probably some other reason why Avraham chose to give the people back. He made a mistake, but I don't know what that mistake was. But we have to learn from this that we shouldn't be embarrassed. That we, when we're doing what's right, so you don't have to be embarrassed to do what's right. You don't have to gloat, but you don't have to be embarrassed. So Avraham gives back the wealth. And he gives back his brother Lot. V'gam et Lot achivu chushoshi, v'gam et anashim v'etam. Notice that the Pasuk says, gam, even this, even that. Stage by stage, the Pasuk is saying he even gave this back. The king of Sodom comes out towards him, and the Pasuk says, v'yitzei melech Sodom likrato achei shuvo makot et gedol omech v'et amlachim sharito. The king of Sodom went out to him after he finished beating Kedorlaomer Omer and the kings that were with him, El Emek Shavehu Emek HaMelech, to the flatlands that were flatlands of equation. What does it mean? It means that the whole world united, became equal, and said, we're forming a UN. United Nations, we want the king over us as Avram. And at this point, when Avram stood up and defeated Nimrod, and defeated these four wicked kings, the rest of the kings of the world got together and they said, we have to take Avram as our king. They formed the United Nations and they appointed Avram as top of the United Nations. And that's why it's called Emek Shavehu Emek HaMelech. It's the flatlands that were equal, where all the nations were equal, and made it the flatlands of the king of Avram, who was, I guess, the representative of God. Umalki Tzedek Melech Shalem, Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem. What is Shalem? Shalem is Jerusalem. Avraham Avinu calls it Yeroeh. Malki Tzedek is called the king of Shalem. And God says, I'll make peace between the name Yeroeh and Shalem, and I'll make it Yerushalem. And that's why you'll notice that Yerushalayim is always written without the Yud. It's not written Yerushalayim, but it's rather written Yerushalem. If you look in Tanakh, throughout Tanakh, it's written Yerushalayim, without the extra Yud, because it's a combination of Yeroeh and Shalem. And it's interesting that the kings of Jerusalem, wait a second, Jerusalem is a country, Jerusalem is a city. Malki Tzedek, the king of Jerusalem. So, what? It's not a surprise, but it does indicate to us that when we read about kings in the land of Israel, and we read that there were tens of kings in the land of Israel, that seems to indicate that they weren't such big kings. That's what it would seem. Okay, maybe. I'm talking about when Yeshua came in. That's what I'm talking about. Okay, I didn't know that. Thank you.
Yeah,
Yeah, but he could have governors. You see that other empires had governors. If you say that, then there would have to be a king above them, and it doesn't seem that there was. It seems like they had treaties, but they were individual kings. Okay. So Malkitzedek, the king of Yerushalayim, the king of Shalem, brings out bread and wine. And he is really Avram's great, great, great grandfather, right? He's 9 generations up. From Noach to Avram is 10. Malkitzedek is Shem. So he's Noach's son. So he's Avram's 9 generations up grandfather. And he takes out bread and wine. V'hu kohen le'el elyon. And he is a kohen. What does the word kohen mean? What does the word kohen mean? No, what does the word kohen mean? It means servant. Rashi quotes a word in French, which means servant. Kohen is a servant. He is a servant to the potent one who is above us all, Le'el Elyon. Now, Shem was supposed to be the father of all Kohanim. The Pasuk introduces him as Kohen because had he not erred, he's about to make a critical error. Had he not made this critical error, all Kohanim would have come from Shem. That's what the Gemara tells us. What is Shem's error? That Shem begins by saying, Vayivarcheu vayomar, he blessed Avram, saying, Baruch Avram le'el elyon konei shamayim v'aretz. Blessed is Avram to the potent one who is above us all, who has created the heavens and the earth. Uvaruch el elyon, and blessed is the potent one who is above us all. Why does he bless Avram first? Nebuchadnezzar once wrote a letter in which he switched the order by mistake. And he ran 3 footsteps after his messenger to fix the letter. He didn't catch the messenger, but he ran 3 footsteps. And Chazal say because he ran those 3 footsteps in honor of God, he merited to rule the world, destroy the temple. And in commemorating what 3 footsteps of walking towards the honor of God do, we take 3 footsteps every day in the beginning of Shemona Esrei. Right? We walk 3 steps towards Shemona Esrei. We're walking towards God when we begin Shemona Esrei. What? According to some commentaries, it's to commemorate what Nebuchadnezzar did. We're saying, we'll walk towards God those 3 footsteps. There's another midrash that says that when Moshe Rabbeinu saw the vision in the burning bush, he took 3 footsteps towards the vision. So we're commemorating that when we stand Shemona Esrei. But there's also the opinion that says it's corresponding to Nebuchadnezzar. So Malkitzedek, he errs. He gives honor to Avram first. Here there's a lot of room to discuss what do the words Kone Shemayim V'aretz mean. Literally the words Kone means he acquired. But God didn't acquire them from anyone. So God created them. So some commentaries say the word Kone means to create. But that is very difficult, linguistically, how the word kone could mean to create. So this is discussed, and it's very relevant to us, because we say it every day in Shemona Esrei, 3 times a day. Kone Shemayim V'aretz, we say in the first blessing of Shemona Esrei every day. Well, it could have multiple meanings, but it's difficult.
Oh yeah, the meaning, but it has that meaning.
Right. Right, right. Uvaruch kel elyon, asher migen tzarecha biyadecha, and blessed is the potent one who is above us all that gave over your enemies in your hands, vayten lo ma'aser mikol, and Avram gives him a tenth of everything. So here we see an indication that one is supposed to give a tenth. This concept of giving a tenth is discussed. It doesn't have good sources in Chazal. The Noda Behuda was questioned about the laws of Meiser, and he begins the response by saying, you know, it's difficult for me to discuss something that doesn't have sources in Chazal. There are very few sources about this concept of giving a tith today, giving a tith from our money. So when you want to give a halachic ruling, you look in the Gemara and you have almost nothing. You look in Shulchan Aruch, you have almost nothing. Basically, it boils down to a few opinions. One opinion says, just like we have to give a tith of our grains, so too we're supposed to give a tith of our money, and it's biblical. That's not the standardly accepted opinion. What? The other opinion says it's a rabbinic institution. And that's also not the readily accepted opinion. The more accepted opinion is the one that says that it is customary. It is our custom to take a tenth. It's not the tenth of Ma'aser Rishon. It's not the tenth of Avraham Avinu or Yaakov Avinu. But rather, that is our custom. So it is unclear where today we get this custom of giving a tenth from. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, we're up to Chamishi. Vayomer Melech Sodom el Avraham, the king of Sodom tells Avraham, Ten li ha-nefesh v'achush kachlach. Give me the people, give me the lives, and you take the wealth. And here we have the Gemara in Nedarim, that the Gemara says that Avraham Avinu was punished, that his children were in forced servitude in Egypt for 210 years, because he held people back from coming under the wings of the Shekhinah. People who could have easily been Jews, Avraham Avinu held them back, he gave them back to the king of Sodom. That's what the Gemara says. Vayomer Avram el Melech Sodom. Avram says to the king of Sodom, Harimoti adi el Adonai el Elyon konei shamayim v'aretz. I raise my hand to God, who is the potent one above all, who has created the heavens and the earth. What does konei shamayim v'aretz mean? So the Gemara says that Avram says, I've made God known throughout the heavens and the earth. When I came to the planet, no one knew about God. But then people would come to me, and I'd give them a 5-star hotel. I'd let them eat and drink, and after they finished eating and drinking, they'd get up to leave, and I'd say, wait a second, now the bill. And the people would say, well, what do you mean? And I'd say, well, you just ate a lot of good food. You just drank a lot of good wine. Now you got to pay. And the people say, well, what do I pay? And Avram would say, you don't have to pay me. Don't tell me thank you. But turn to the one who created it all and tell him thank you. And then he'd start talking to him about the fact that God created the world. First he'd give him to eat. He didn't preach first. First he gave him to eat. Avraham Avinu refuses to accept anything. He tells the king of Sodom, "Im mechut v'atzuchnal. I don't want a string, I don't want a shoestring from you. I don't want a shoestring." In their days, what were shoestrings made of? Hide, right? I don't want a string of material. I don't want a hide leather strap from your shoe. And our sages tell us when Avram said that, he merited that his children would get the two mitzvahs, the mitzvah of tcheles and the mitzvah of tefillin. Those two mitzvahs correspond to the shoe strap that he refused to get and the string that he refused to get. So that opinion, Rava, who learns this way, seems to be disagreeing with the previous opinion we learned. He seems to be saying that what Avram did was right, that it was a tremendous kiddush Hashem, that he didn't accept the wealth of the king of Sodom. So on the surface, it seems we've seen two explanations, and maybe tomorrow we'll have time to go more in depth to these two understandings of what Avraham Avinu did over here.